It seems like Arjuna's giving excuses for not fighting. Anyone else have an opinion or thought? When most people read this first chapter, quite often they think, yeah, he's right. You know, what kind of war is this where you have to fight against your family members? It would be better to go to the forest. How could you kill under those circumstances? What kind of killing is that, and how could you enjoy it? And it would spoil the whole family. And what a noble person Arjuna is, that he's ready to sacrifice his own victory for the sake of sparing, even though these people have been against him and they've usurped the kingdom, stolen the kingdom. Still he says, well, let them have it. Better to let them just let it go. So people think Arjuna's he's a really great guy. He's really a high thinker or a noble thinker. Now the second chapter begins. And in the previous verse, we see that Arjuna's sitting there, you know, totally overwhelmed. You know, imagine, suppose if I said, like, divide the room down the middle, and you guys on the right kill the guys on the left, and you guys on the left try and kill the guys on the right. And imagine further that, you know, this guy is your cousin, and this guy is your brother, and this guy is your grandfather, and this guy is your teacher. And I say, okay, here's your guns, go to it. It's like too much, right? For Arjuna, there's like not just a room full, there's a battlefield full of friends and relatives, people he grew up with. His cousins, I mean, you know, the kids he used to play with. His grandfather. You know, all people who are dear to him, everybody's on the battlefield. And the trumpets have blown, and now it's just like they're ready to start. And Arjuna sees all these people. So he's sitting on the chariot, he drops his bow, his mouth is dry, tears are coming from his eyes, he's devastated. And then Krishna is standing there as his charioteer, and he begins to speak. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kutastva Kashmamanidam, Vishamaya Samupastitam, Anarya Drishtam Asvargyam Akirtikam. He says, my dear Arjuna, this is totally unworthy of you. How have these dirty things overtaken your mind? These impurities. Anarya drishta, asvargya, akirti kaimarja. Anarya means not suitable for a person who knows the higher purpose in life, or the higher values in life. He says it doesn't lead to elevation. This will lead to degradation, to infamy. Your reputation will be spoiled. And Srila Prabhupada comments at the beginning by explaining who it is that's speaking to Arjuna. You see those words there, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Every time Krishna speaks, that's what it says. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha means said, and Sri Bhagavan means Krishna. So whenever Krishna begins to speak, these are the words that we find, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The book is called Bhagavad Gita. That means the book spoken by Bhagavan. So Prabhupada explains who Bhagavan is. He sees this as the key word. Key word in the book. The key to understanding the book is to understand what this word means, Bhagavan. And Srila Prabhupada explains it. First he explains that if we want to know the supreme truth, or God, God is realized in three different ways. The first way is that God is everywhere. We hear that, right, all the time, God is everywhere. But how is God everywhere? He's everywhere. Like the sunshine. Sunshine is everywhere. So God is everywhere. So that's one realization of God. Then there's another realization of God. God is in my heart. You've heard that also, right? God is within you. That's the second realization. He's everywhere, but then getting a little more focused, God is in my heart. Or he's in the heart of everyone. And then there's a third realization. Yeah, just come on in. There's a third realization that God is in his kingdom. God has his own place. God is a person. You know, if God is in my heart, then he's maybe his only work there is to give guidance, to give inspiration, to, you know, speak to me from within the heart. But then the next realization is, well, God has his own place where he does what he wants to do. He has his own kingdom. So these are three realizations of God. God is everywhere. God is in my heart. And God is in his own place, his own kingdom. And here it's explained that this is the same one God, but seen from different angles of vision. And the example of the sun is quite good. That you see the sun everywhere. And then you look further and you see, well, wait, the sun is in the sky. And it's both true. The sun's everywhere, the sun's in the sky. But if you know the sun in the sky, then you automatically know the sunshine that's everywhere. If all you know is the sunshine, you still don't know that there's a planet, the sun. But once you know the sun planet, then you know the sunshine also. But you go further, and you know, people in many cultures have believed that there's a god on the sun. You know, a sun god? The Egyptians worship the sun god, and it's okay. So that would be like a third feature, that if you actually went to the sun planet and met the sun god, then you know everything about the sun. You know the planet, you know the sunshine, and you know the person who's in charge. So these are three realizations of God, and God is all three. It's just a question of how you look. Just as sun god and the sun planet and the sunshine, it's all the sun. But when you know the sun god, then you know everything about the sun. So the same thing with the Supreme God. He's everywhere, and he's in everyone's heart. And finally, he's the Supreme Person. And person means that he has his form, right? He has his qualities, you know, being truthful, being merciful, being beautiful, he has his name. He has activities, just as we do. You have a name, you have a form, you have qualities, you have activities. And what does it say? Like father, like son? So you can tell something about your father by seeing what you're like. So you can tell something about God the same way. You have a place where you live, you have a form, you have qualities. So all these things are in God. God is the source of everything. So he must have everything that we have, but more. Yeah? Now we come to this, right down to the meaning of this word, Bhagavan. Bhaga means like opulence. Opulence. It's an interesting word, opulence. Some great characteristic. And we'll talk about that in a second. And Bhan means one who has. So it's a person who has opulence. That's Bhagavan. Now, what are God's opulences? They're given as six. One is beauty. We've heard that God is the most beautiful, right? Whatever is beautiful comes from God. So that's one of God's opulences. God is beautiful. Another is strength. God is so strong that he keeps all the planets, he's holding everything in place. Strength. Wealth. That's another opulence. To be the owner of something is an opulence. And God is the owner of everything. Yes, the wealth. And knowledge. That would be an opulence, or you could say an asset. If I have a lot of knowledge, or if you have a lot of knowledge, then that's something special. And not everybody has a lot of knowledge, but if someone comes and full of knowledge, we say, wow, that guy knows everything. He's a smart guy. So that's another opulence. Beauty and fame. You know, I don't know who's famous these days, but if some famous person walked in the door, we'd all go, wow. Obama. If Mr. Obama were to walk in the door, we'd all go, wow, because he's a famous person. Or some big rock star, or big soccer player. We'd all say, wow, because he's famous. Beauty, fame, knowledge, strength. Beauty, fame, knowledge, strength, renunciation, to be detached. You know, a person who could just say, yeah, it's okay. Like Arjuna, saying, I can leave the battlefield, it's okay. You guys take it. Right? I can just walk away from everything. Most of us can't do that. Right? But men who can just walk away from everything and say, okay, you guys take it. That's detachment. And I'm missing one. Beauty, fame, knowledge, strength. Okay. Renunciation and Aishvaryasya. Wealth. Okay. So that comes to six. So, we all have these things to a certain extent. Right? I have a little bit of knowledge. But there's so many people who know more than I do. Suppose you might know more than I do. Then there's someone who knows more than you do. And there's someone who knows more than him. And on and on and on and on you go. There's always somebody, somebody, somebody. But when you get to the person who has the most knowledge, nobody has more than he does. Who's that? That's God. In the same way, say beauty. You know, someone's beautiful, someone's more beautiful, someone's still more beautiful. When you get to the person who has the most beauty, who's that? That's God. And, you know, okay, there's a famous rock star, a famous politician. But who's the most famous person? So when you get to the person who has the most fame, the most knowledge, the most strength, the most beauty, the most wealth, the most detachment, come on in. When you get to the person who's supreme in all of these things, that's God. That's God. So that's what this word Bhagavan means. That's what Bhagavan means. It means the person who has all of these characteristics, all of these qualities, all of these opulences, more than anyone else. No one can be greater. No one can even be equal. That's God. And one more thing about these opulences is that they're attractive. You know, if somebody has money, then people are attracted to them. A person with less money is attracted to the person who has more money. A person who has less knowledge is attracted to the person who has more knowledge. A person who's less strong is attracted to the person who's more strong. But the person who has all beauty, all knowledge, all wealth, all strength, all fame, all detachment, will be attractive to everyone. Will be attractive to any other beautiful person, any other famous person, any other person who has knowledge. He'll be the most attractive person. Whether some people would have money but they don't have beauty, you know, they're rich and ugly. Somebody has good looks, but no brain. Beautiful and stupid. And so on. People have something, but not everything. But when you get to the person who's got all of these things, 100%, more than anyone else, he's the most attractive person there can be. He'll attract any rich man, any famous man, any strong man, any wise man, anyone who's detached. So that's Krishna. That's Krishna. You know what that word Krishna means? You know what Krishna means? God. And God, you know, his different names mean different things. So the Krishna name means he's all attractive. All attractive. So it's a universal name for God. God will attract the richest person, most famous person. It doesn't matter whether you're Christian or Muslim or Jewish or whatever. He'll attract everyone. It doesn't matter whether you're African or American or Egyptian or Australian, man, woman, tall, short. He can attract everyone. So that's a universal name for God. God has more than, he's not restricted, only one name. How many names do you have, Tom?
Quite a number.
Quite a number. Okay. You have a first name, last name, middle name, nickname.
Four
names, just to get started with. So we even, you know, those of us sitting here, we have three or four or five names. So what to speak of God? Just like sometimes a person is called in terms of his characteristic. Like sometimes there's a guy with red hair. So what do people call him? They call him redhead, or they just call him red. Hey, red. because he has that characteristic that he's got red hair. So, according to people's play, I have another example. Ready in my mind, but like that, you know, according to their qualities, according to their qualities. Or you know, sometimes a person like the smartest class, the guy in the class, they call him genius. Okay, genius, what's happening today? Right? Because he's smart, so they call him, according to that quality, they call him genius. So some guy in the class is red, some guy is genius, some guy's something else. So God has names according to his qualities. Because he's all attractive, he's called Krishna. So that's a universal name. And he has so many other names. So many other names. Even water in different languages, it has so many other names. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very important to know that the person who's speaking, Krishna, is not just an ordinary person. He's not just an ordinary character. He's the supreme person. He's the supreme, and he's a person. God is not less than a person. You're a person. Your father was a person. His father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather. You go all the way back, all the way back, you always find a person. So if you go all the way back, what are you going to find? You're going to find something impersonal. You'll find the person, right? So that's Krishna. He's that supreme person. Or Srila Prabhupada has this longer term, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme Personality of Godhead. Which is sort of a more sophisticated way of saying that he's God. And he advises Arjuna that you've got it all wrong. You're lamenting, but this is unworthy of you. And Krishna will soon explain why that's unworthy. And I'm going to stop here and see what kind of questions you might have for me so far.
So you mean to say that if Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Supreme Personality of Godhead is quite a big term. There's a lot of syllables there. But finally it means the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Person. Godhead is sort of a technical word for the Absolute, the Supreme, the Ultimate. So Prabhupada uses this term, Supreme Personality of Godhead. We shouldn't think he's just an ordinary person. But he's the supreme person, God himself.
Okay, so say that if when we leave this body, do we become God, or because we end up being Supreme Personality of God, or going to Supreme Personality of God, so we become?
Well, that is a great question. When we leave this body, when we leave this world, do we become God? So there are those people who think that now I'm just, you know, small. But when I become self-realized, especially, then I can become God, or I can merge with God. I become one with God. Right? But from the Bhagavad Gita, that's not what we find. Suppose I think that actually I'm really God. You know, now I think I'm just Joe the barber. but really I'm God. Only I've forgotten my divine nature. I've forgotten that I'm God. But then we have to ask, what kind of stupid God is that who can't even remember who he is? Right? How has God become such a fool that he can't even remember that he's God? That's the problem with that philosophy. That I'm supposed to be God, only I've forgotten. But how have I forgotten? You say, well, now I'm in illusion. So I've forgotten that. But what kind of God is it who comes under the power of illusion? That means illusion is greater than God. And then he's not God anymore. Then illusion becomes God. So the idea that now I'm God, but when God gets a toothache, then he has to go to the dentist God. And he can't take it either. He has to get a shot because he can't stand the pain. That's a pretty saturated God. So, at the present moment, at least we have to say, no, I'm not God. But then, in the future, I'll become God. There's a problem with that, because God is eternal. So how am I going to become God when the post is already occupied? And God is already there. So how am I going to become him? I'm already who I am. So there's, in the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that we're not God, we're part of God. And those who say that we're God are not 100% wrong. Maybe only 99%. There's some truth to it. Because if you think about it, God is a person and I'm a person. God is conscious, I'm conscious. God is living, I'm living. God has some sort of thought, I have some sort of thought. God has some desire to do something, I have some desire to do something. So, if you look at God and you look at me, you say, well, we're the same. He's a person, I'm a person. He has desires, I have desires. He has thoughts, I have thoughts. See? No difference. But the difference is in quantity. I have the qualities of God. God is eternal. I'm eternal. God has knowledge, I have knowledge. God is joyful by nature, I'm supposed to be joyful by nature. But the difference is that God is great, and I am small. Just like the spark and the fire. The fire gives off light, the spark gives off light. Fire gives off heat, the spark gives off heat. Does that mean that the spark is identical with the fire? Yes and no. It is identical. It has the same qualities. But it's not at all identical because the fire is great and the spark is small. The spark, if it goes out of the fire, what happens?
Goes out.
The spark is dependent on the fire. The fire is not dependent on the spark. Spark can go out, the fire keeps roaring. So the spark is a part of the fire, but it's not the whole fire. The part and the whole are not the same. They're the same, like a piece of pie is the same as the whole pie. You know, if the pie is made of pumpkin, then the piece is pumpkin and the whole thing is pumpkin. But the piece is still only a little piece. It's not the whole thing. So we're part of God, and Krishna or God is the whole. So the part never becomes the whole. Part is always the part. But the part can be situated in its right place. Just like this little screw here is part of the microphone stand. So at the present moment, it's a very valuable thing because it's in its right place. But if the screw were lying on the floor, it would just be useless. It does no good lying there. The little screw has meaning, has value, when it's in the whole machine. So we have value when we're in our place in connection with Krishna. When we're disconnected from Krishna, then we're useless. Or from another point of view, when we're disconnected from Krishna, then we're in trouble. Just like the spark when it's out of the fire. Then it's in danger of going out. Or a child without the parents. Wandering around the street, the child's going to be in trouble. And when the child is with the parents, then the child is fine. Our problem in the material world is that we're disconnected from God. And but under illusion, I sometimes think, I'm God. Then, 2 days later, I'm dead. No, we can't.
That's okay.
Something else? Another question you might have? Yeah?
So, is Bhakti Yoga the only process that you can use to go back to?
Bhakti Yoga is the only?
It's the only, practice that you can use to go back to God.
Yeah, Bhakti Yoga is the only process we can use to go back to God. Bhakti Yoga means what? Devotional service.
So, let's say you're a Sudra.
You're a Sudra, a laborer.
Uh-huh.
So now, does it mean that you don't have a chance of going to God?
Oh no, because Bhakti Yoga is open to everyone. Doesn't matter whether I'm a king or a sage, a wise man, or a farmer, or laborer. It doesn't matter at all. Because Bhakti Yoga is open to everyone. Everyone is Krishna's servant, and everyone can act as Krishna's servant. It's just a question of how I do it. Like the king can serve Krishna by doing his duties as a king. Arjuna is a warrior. He'll serve Krishna by fighting. Someone else is a farmer. He'll serve Krishna by taking care of cows, by tilling the fields. Someone else is a teacher. He'll serve Krishna by teaching. It's not that the teacher is better than the farmer, or that the teacher is better than the worker. What matters is that they all do their service for Krishna. The teacher who teaches for Krishna and the worker who works for Krishna, who does labor for Krishna, are on the same level. The king and the farmer are on the same level. Everyone's on the same level when they're serving Krishna. It's not that one occupation makes one better than someone else. What makes someone, you can say, better is when he's situated in the service of Krishna, because then he's in his healthy condition. Otherwise, whatever you are, you're useless. The laborer without Krishna consciousness, the farmer or businessman without Krishna consciousness, the king or executive without Krishna consciousness, the intellectual or teacher without Krishna consciousness, they're all useless. Equally useless. Prabhupada's example is that if you have a zero, what's it worth?
Yep.
Nothing, right? Now you have two zeros. What are they worth? You can add as many zeros as you want, and they're worth nothing. There's only value when you put a one in front of the zero. Then there's value. So bhakti yoga means adding Krishna or connecting with Krishna. Then everything has value. Okay.
Yeah, so now the question is, because there was a time we had a class and we were taught that it takes for you millions of years, you know, to go back to God. Does it mean that now I'll be transmigrating?
For millions of years?
Millions of years. Now, I'll be doing that yoga for millions of years by transmigration.
We'd like to give a shortcut. Millions of years is an awfully long time. Krishna says that in this one lifetime you can come back to me. Bhavami na chiratparta maya vesha tachetasa. If we become fully Krishna conscious, then in this lifetime we can go. You don't have to wait millions and millions. Millions and millions is when we're forgetting Krishna. But when we revive our Krishna consciousness, in one lifetime you can go. How's that?
The question remains that at the end of the day, you still have partly Krishna consciousness.
At the end of the day, you still have...
Like, how do you know that you're fully Krishna conscious?
How do you... How do you know that you're fully Krishna? Well, you know, generally a devotee doesn't think, I'm fully Krishna conscious. Because he's humble. So he thinks, I'm trying to be Krishna conscious. But Krishna sees, this person is actually always thinking of me. From one point of view, you can see for yourself, if I'm always thinking of Krishna, then I'm Krishna conscious. Or to the extent that I'm thinking about Krishna and Krishna consciousness. To the extent that I'm becoming detached from other things on Krishna consciousness. You can judge your own progress. But finally, it's Krishna himself who sees. Yes, this person is dedicated. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Listening to you, I realize that probably from what we believe, maybe from our religion, it's nothing much, only that maybe God has a different name. Yeah, his name is Krishna. As we call him, another different name. Like you've just said, there are many names for him. Now, where does the problem come in, especially when it comes to marriages? Because you hear that now you don't allow intermarriages or something.
Well, we allow you can marry anybody you want.
No.
He was asking about marriages because he understood that Krishna means God, and so there are different names, and different religions have different names. So then, what about intermarriages? We don't care. You marry a Christian, you marry a Muslim, you marry this, you marry that. It doesn't really matter.
Somebody's good. Some are disowned.
Yeah,
disowned.
Yeah, somebody says, if you marry that boy, then you're finished. Or someone says, you marry that girl, and it's all over. Yeah, we're not going to do that. We don't care. You marry whoever you want. It's not... Suppose someone's worshipping God, someone's Muslim, someone's Christian, because, you know, Krishna consciousness is not actually a religion. Just like there's a Christian religion, there's a Jewish religion, there's a Muslim religion, there's a Jain religion. So Krishna consciousness is not another religion. You can't actually join this religion, and you can't actually leave this religion. The word in Sanskrit is not exactly the same as religion. It's called dharma. And dharma means the characteristic of something that's its permanent character. Just like sugar, what's the quality of sugar? It's sweet. If you say this sugar is salty, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Sugar means it's sweet. Or if you say that this chili is cooling. Yeah, the business of chili is to be hot. It's its permanent characteristic. So what's the permanent characteristic of a living being? If you really analyze it the way that sages have done, they've concluded that the characteristic of a living being is to serve. You know, the politician says, I want to serve the people. Please give me your vote. The businessman says, I want to serve my customers. Give me your business. Everybody's serving somebody. The employee serves the boss. The parents serve the children. Children maybe serve the parents. The friend serves his friend. Everyone's serving. Even people keep a dog and they're serving the dog. Nobody can get away from being a servant, because that's what we are by nature. Every one of us is a servant. Now I'm serving my country, or I'm serving my family, or I'm serving my dog, or I'm serving my friends. Maybe I'm serving my senses. But I'm serving these temporary things. So when you turn the service to God, then you're in your eternal service position. Well, that nature of being a servant, and ultimately of being a servant of God, that's within everyone. It's not that the Christian say, well, I'm not a servant of God. No, that's Christianity means to be a servant of God. And what does Islam mean? Islam means to be a servant of God. What does Judaism mean? It means to be a servant of God. What is the Jain? It means to be a servant of God. So this is the actual religion of every living entity. It's not a religion you can join in. It's just the religion or the eternal function that we can resume or uncover. Christian can become a Hindu. Hindu can become a Muslim. Muslim can become a Christian. Christian can become... That's changing. But to be a servant of God, that can't change. It can be forgotten. I can forget that I'm a servant of God. But I can't not be a servant of God. So Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga is for people of every religion. You can be a Muslim and be Krishna conscious. You can be a Christian and be Krishna conscious. You can be anything and be Krishna conscious. So the devotee, he doesn't care very much whether my wife is a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or something else, but she should be Krishna conscious. That's the thing. She should have that idea that I'm a servant of God. That my purpose in life is to practice bhakti yoga or to develop that relationship of service to God. How's that?
It's interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if we have any other questions tonight. Yes.
I just sort of wanted to confirm a bit with Bhakti Yoga, as my friend was saying. You're basically also saying that it's mainly the material world that puts everyone on a different level. So when someone comes and says, I'm the boss, you know, and he's my house, you know, he's my house brother or my house girl or something, it's mainly just the material world, it's not really this.
Yeah, it's in the material world. You know, someone's the boss, and someone's the king, and someone's the street sweeper, and someone's this, and someone's that. So we make distinctions. Say, well, this person's got a high post, this person's in a low position, this person's this, this person's that. That's all temporary. At the time of death, they're all in the same position.
So basically, just in general, everyone's just on the same level.
Yeah. Materially, it may be different. You know, someone's strong and someone's weak. Someone's a big shot and someone's a small shot. Someone's tall and someone's short. Someone's this and someone's that. That's superficial. That's not my eternal identity. That's only on the material platform. But on the spiritual platform, every human being is equal. What to speak of human beings, even the animals, even the plants, even the fish and the birds, they're all spiritual living beings. They're just covered by different bodies. So the self-realized person sees all the living beings. He sees equality. That, you know, we want equality in human society. But Krishna consciousness means we see equality across the board. There's no difference between an elephant and a human being, and a dog and a cow and a fish. They're all eternal spiritual living beings. Yes?
And Srila Prabhupada said, I don't know if you correct me or wrong, he said, pay all your debt in this one lifetime and go back home and go back home to money. When he was talking about debt, I understand debt means our karma that we've been accruing over millions of lifetimes. But now, should we think, it's like a realization, I have a debt, so I must pay it off.
No, I don't understand.
But Prabhupada said, should we sometimes think to ourselves when we're practicing devotional service that to give us like some inspiration and think of all these things that have been clouding us as like a debt, so we should just sort of make it a practice to sort of say,
well, we're all indebted to God. God is giving us water, God is giving us light. I mean, you know, suppose I use the lights for 3 years, for 3 months here. Now I have a debt to the electric company, right? I don't know how much it is, but I have a debt. If I use the water for a month, I have a debt. If I, you know, in the same way, all these facilities. Now God is supplying everything, water, light, food. Do I have a debt? Sure. Can I repay? No, it's too big. All I can do is serve.
Mm-hmm. Could I equate service to another human being as service to God? Since
can you count service to another human being as service to God? Yeah, but indirectly.
So which one is direct?
Mm-hmm.
Which one is direct? Which one is more direct?
Yeah, if you directly serve God, just suppose, for example, that I'm speaking about God. So that's directly service to God.
But you're speaking to me.
Hmm?
But you are speaking to me.
Yeah, or if you're hearing, that's also service to God. It's not that speaking is a better service than hearing. To hear about God is also service. And it's direct, you know. You're thinking about God because you're hearing about Him. I'm thinking about God because I'm speaking about Him. So we're both engaged in the service of God. We suppose we decide to build a temple for God. So we're engaged in the service of God. So many things that we can do to serve God. Now if I serve another human being, well, the human being is like the spark in the fire. He's part of God also. So indirectly I'm serving God. But not directly. Suppose like it's something like a tree. If I pour water on the leaves, I'm pouring water on the tree. But that's not really the way you water a tree. Right? You pour the water on the root of the tree, then all the leaves, all the branches get the water. So if I'm watering the leaves, I'm watering the tree, but sort of in an indirect way, because I'm only watering a little part and not watering the whole. So you can think of Krishna as being the root of everything. When I'm serving Krishna, then my service goes everywhere. But if I'm just serving a little part,
not the same.
Okay. Should we stop here? You have an announcement. Okay.
So I would like to thank all of you today for attending today's class.